Somebody's phone here. Hi, my name is Paul, and I'm an alcoholic. And it's good to be here, and it's good to be sober. And I want to thank the Westside Men's Group for giving me the opportunity to come down here this morning and do service. It's been a wonderful breakfast. I've enjoyed it so far, and I hope I say something that'll help somebody here today. And I went outside to take a walk around for a bit of inspiration. I almost melted, you know. I forgot that Florida this time of the year is only like 3 miles from the sun, you know. You know, I should have brought my dental record, you know what I mean? I want to thank, it's been a wonderful morning so far, and I think this is the one time of the year that they invite the family and friends here to this breakfast, so there's some non-alcoholics here. Perhaps you can identify with this. There's a guy who's sober, and he's out on one of these websites to go on a date. He goes out on this blind date with this woman. He's sober a while, and she's a normal drinker. And they're out having dinner for the first time, and she says, "I notice you don't drink." And he says, "No, I don't drink." She says, "You don't drink at all?" He says, "No, not at all." She goes, "Not even one drop?" He says, "Not even one drop." She says, "What would happen if you took one drink of my wine?" He says, "Well, just imagine you wake up. You don't know where you are. You don't know what day it is. You don't know what time it is. You got one shoe on. Your phone's gone. Your car keys are gone. You're totally disheveled." She says, "That would happen to you if you took one drink." He said, "That happened to you if I took one drink, you know." And if you think that's funny, you're probably in the right place, you know. No matter what side of the dinner table you were sitting at, you know. And I know we all laugh at that because it really sets up the juxtaposition between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic, you know. But with every joke, there's a strong element of truth. And hearing this morning all the years of sobriety, and isn't it wonderful that Alcoholics Anonymous is, you know, we talk about the way of this program, you see all the years here today. Alcoholics Anonymous is one of the few places in the world where the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. And we all come in here, whether it's one day or 50 years, 8 years, and everybody has worth and everybody has value. Because this is God's economy. And in God's economy, the currency that we talk about is experience, strength, and hope, and unconditional love. And we do together what I can't do alone, and that's not drink one day at a time. And Alcoholics Anonymous is one of the few places where, like, energy is like electricity. It flows from positive to negative and not the other way around. And these people helped me and lifted me up when I come in here. And when I think about the first time it was mentioned there, that I walked into the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on probably the worst night of my life. And isn't that the grace of God? And it's so much more than grace. It's mercy. And the definition of mercy that I like the best is entering into the chaos of another person's life. And in August of 1992, in my life, when everybody, and rightly so, was going that way, the only people coming this way was Alcoholics Anonymous. And they carried this message. My message mightn't even get me sober. This message that we see and offer here today. And I believe that when complete defeat through alcohol, step one, I got a body that won't let me drink, a mind that won't let me stop. My life's unmanageable, drunk or sober, if I'm running it. 23 years off a drink, I realize today, and I hope I never forget, one drink, destination unknown. One drink. When I controlled my drink and I couldn't enjoy it, and when I enjoyed my drink and I couldn't control it, and that's what separates me from the normal or the heavy drinker. So used people in this lifeboat that we call AA took this broken down world heater, stopped the world I want to get off, and brought me to a place, from a place of powerlessness, not to a place where I'm powerful, that would be ego, but a place where I have access to power 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, on unlimited supply. I want to thank you because, as I said there, we do together what I can't do alone. The day that I'm doing AA alone is the day I'm getting ready to get drunk again. There's a friend of mine says, if you're doing AA alone, it's not AA, it's BB. I says, what's BB? He said, I don't know, but it's not AA, you know? And I'd like to tell you a little bit about how it was and what happened and how it is today. And hopefully, in the next 2 or 3 hours, I should be able to wrap it all up, you know. The guy one day is getting very nervous about now, you know. I know this may come as a shock to some people, but I'm from not from the neighborhood originally, you know. And as Joe said, about 25 years since I left my native Cuba, and you know. I'm from Northern Ireland, outside of Belfast, and the sort of neighborhood I came from, if you didn't drink, you moved. You know, everybody drank. I didn't know anybody that didn't drink. I wasn't one of these guys, oh, that's what alcohol does, you know. I mean, I used to look at, you know, you used to get out no mental gymnastics when I first came here. Why did I become an alcoholic? When did I become an alcoholic? Why, you know, what came first, the chicken or the keg, you know, and there's a few guys that get drunk trying to figure that one out, you know. I mean, if I look at my family tree, it's a bit like Eugene O'Neill's Long Day's Journey into Night. You know, there was alcoholism in one side of the family and mental illness on the other side of the family. I'm not here to point any fingers, but when I took my first breath, I blew a .28, you know. I could have been taken from the delivery room right to the AA room, you know. You see that newcomer in the bassinet? Give him a white chip, you know. Make sure he doesn't swallow it, you know. All I know is I don't know, as I said, the why of the war. All I know is there have been two turning points in my life that are so clear, that the demarcations before and after is so clear. And one of them was taking my first drink, and the other was walking into a meeting of AA. And basically, as I found out, I was looking for the same thing. Carl Jung says alcoholism can be characterized as a low-grade spiritual thirst. I was looking for something. For whatever reason, I don't know and I don't care anymore. I had this hole in my soul. And I tried to fill it with booze and people and places and things. And had some symbolic victories along the way, but nothing of any permanence. The only time I really filled that hole in my soul is when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and put this program with your help and the 12 steps of AA was able to fill that hole. So I don't know, but all I know is I took that first drink. It was like my life went from black and white to color. You had that stone in my shoe and not in my stomach. I mean, for a chronic people pleaser like me with low self-esteem, it was a magic elixir. It was a potion. And looking back on it, I made a Faustian bargain. I made a deal with the devil. As it says, John Barleycorn can be aptly called the devil himself. I mean, booze will give you a lift, it give me a lift. But when it comes time to pay the freight, watch out. In The Merchant of Venice, Shylock just wanted 1 pound of flesh, not this disease. It'll take your job, your car, your partner, your kids, the shirt off your back. But what it really wants is me 6 feet under. I haven't been around a lifetime, but long enough to know what happens if you take your eye off the ball. This disease will kill me stone dead with or without a drink in my body. I don't need booze in my body to burn my life to the ground. I can do it without drink, with untreated alcoholism. You know? As I said, there, this program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and today I'm standing here in a safe place because of your help. You know, those 12 steps, people say, oh, you're just an arm's length away from a drink, and I suppose that's true. But because of your help and God's grace, I'm 12 steps away from a drink. And that's a long, long way from when I first walked in here. But don't get me wrong, I don't think they're 12 steps up to anything. I think they're 12 steps down to humility. A daily reprieve. I'm in this safe place today, but I can backtrack through those steps. Take my will back in 3, become insane in 2. So insane that I tell myself I'm not an alcoholic and get drunk in the first step. I've seen people drink again in AA that I thought would never drink again. I'm not taking an inventory, but that tells me there's certain things I must do to maintain and sustain and improve this gift. There's a friend of mine once drinking after a long period of time. He says, you know how you get drunk in AA? You give those steps back one step at a time. You wake up one morning and you're on that spiritual desert. So if anybody is new here this morning, Alcoholics Anonymous give me something that I never had before. It give me something between me and the first drink. Before I came to AA, I had nothing between me and the first drink. The thought of a drink would become the obsession to drink, an idea that crowds out all other ideas, and I would find myself drinking. People give me something between the first. Now, maybe you're sitting out there this morning, and you're saying, Paul, I don't know if you can see my face. I'm not laughing. I backed myself into a corner I can't get out of. I'm in a trap I can't spring. I'm here to tell you from my experience. You hear that metaphor, you go 10 miles into the forest, you got to go 10 miles out. I don't believe that in AA. I don't care how deep, how dark, how painful that forest you're in might seem. Alcoholics Anonymous tells me, and I'll tell you, you're just 12 steps away from a new life. That's all. Just 12 steps away from a brand new life. Hear people saying, oh, I came to AA and I got my life back. I don't want my life back. It sucked. I had it for 30 years. I could do nothing with it, you know? I got a whole brand new life in Alcoholics Anonymous. Are there people in my life when I was drinking? Absolutely. But things are different today in my world because of your help in this program. And God, as I understand it, my world today is built on concrete. Before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, everything, you know, alcoholics were great starters, get things started, new town. But everything's built on sand. And the first drink always arrives because I had nothing between me and the first drink. So I always rationalize the first drink and I'm washed out to sea one more time with more debris than the last time. And if there was any coordinates, it was pain and misery. Because of your help in this program today, my sober house, like the story I used to read to my little girl when she was young, my story today is on concrete and the world which it will. Because there's days of spiritual warfare out there. And the world can huff and it can puff. But if I stay close to the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, today I don't have to drink no matter what. And I was an alcoholic who drank no matter what. So I encourage anybody that's new. We have a symbol here in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a triangle inside a circle. And there's three parts to it. Unity, service, and recovery. And I believe this and I believe it that I bet my life on a daily basis. I believe that you can put all three parts of that triangle into your life from your very first meeting. Unity. We do together what I can't do alone. I drink, we stay sober. That's been my experience. Service. There's a guy from down this way used to say, the highest pay grade in Alcoholics Anonymous is a servant. Why? Because I'm shackled to self. Driven by 100 forms of it. My holy trinity has always been me, me, me. If you put away one more chair than the one you sat on, congratulations, you're doing service in AA. Recovery. Maybe the steps and the traditions seem like a foreign concept. We have slogans. Easy does it. Live and let live. One day at a time. They were like the banisters to the steps. Now I'm here to tell you, not in the theoretical, but in the purely experiential. You can stay dry in two parts of the triangle. I've done it. You can stay dry in one part of the triangle. I've done that too. But if you want to get free from the, if I wanted to get free from the one person I couldn't get free from and live in the one place I never lived, which is right here, right now, I got to put all three parts into my life and I got to do it every day. That's the way alcoholism is. It never takes a day off. I was out in Las Vegas there one time. I don't gamble, but I like to watch. And, I'm watching these guys in Caesar's Palace, and they're playing high stakes, Texas Hold'em. Perhaps you've seen it on TV. And the guy stood up with all his chips, and he says, I'm all in. And I thought to myself, what a great metaphor for Alcoholics Anonymous. I got to be all in, and I got to be all in every day. I've tried the AA hokey cokey. Put your left foot in, put your left foot out, put your left foot back in again. Get some relief, but nothing of any permanence. So I encourage anybody that's new. I know we throw the word miracle around a lot. The definition I like of miracle is a complete reversal or upheaval of the laws of nature. It's in my nature to be drunk right now, and I'm not. Now, how that happened didn't happen because of me. It happened because of you people. So anybody that's new out here today, I believe this. I believe there's a miracle here with your name on it. Nobody can take it for you. Nobody can take it from you. Come up and get the life you're meant to have before drink took you down another road. Alcoholics Anonymous is one of the few places that I know of where you get the ability to live two lives in one lifetime. That guy that drank himself half to death, he didn't move back to Ireland. He's right here. But if I stay close to you people in this lifeboat, and that's what I see here this morning. You know what I see? I see a lot of unity here in this group. As with these gentlemen last day, I see unity. And we're in one lifeboat together. We're not in 20 or 40 separate dinghies waving at one another. It's one lifeboat. We're in it together, survivors from the sinking ship. It's none of my business who's sitting next to me in the lifeboat. That's God's business. But it is my business if I'm willing to put my hand out, but that I am responsible. Like the gentleman said, there was somebody at the door for me. I got to be there at the door for somebody else. The most selfish act that I could do as an alcoholic is to put the gifts that A has given me and go off into the sunset. As my sponsor would say, don't let the things that Alcoholics Anonymous give you keep you from going to AA. Because Alcoholics Anonymous will give you a life. And that's been my experience. As I said, they're starting out in Northern Ireland. You couldn't have told me this stuff at 14 or 15 years of age. How can I characterize my alcoholism? One story. I was a soccer fanatic as a kid. George Best was a world-class soccer player, lived two neighborhoods over. Every kid in the neighborhood wanted to be the next George Best, including me. I played soccer morning, noon, night. Had all the posters up on my wall. I took a drink at 13 or 14 years of age. I don't think I kicked a soccer ball six times after that. I would have told you for many years that I gave up soccer. I didn't give it up. Alcoholism took that from me. The rabbacious creditor that it is. It came and it took and it took and it took. My mother, alcoholism really came into my life on such a severe impact. It was like incoming. I started drinking at 13 or 14 years of age. I was getting my stomach pumped out on school nights. I remember my mother telling me one time, she didn't know where I was on a school night. She goes, I see this kid getting up and falling. She says, I knew it was you. And it just got worse. It got progressively worse. But I'm here to tell you, not like some snake oil salesman, I'm promising you the moon and the stars. As far down as you go with drink, you can come back up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not going to stand up here and tell you that you'll get everything. There's things I lost through drinking. They're not coming back. There's things you lost through drinking. They're not coming back either. But because of this program, I can live with my past. Who among us could live with the guilt and the shame and the remorse of our drinking if it wasn't for the 12 steps to alleviate that? I wasn't a sociopath. I knew the damage I did, the bridges I burned, the doors I slammed. Thank God for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the rebuilder that it is. And if things don't come back, I can live with the consequences of my drinking. I couldn't do that before I came to AA and put these spiritual principles into my life. Before I'm out of my teens, I'm a daily drinker. Before I'm out of my teens, I'm taking morning drink. As I go into my early 20s, my life's falling apart around me, but I don't want to look in. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a finger pointer. I'm always looking for an outside fix for an inside job. I don't want to look at me. I'm blaming a working class Catholic from the wrong side of the tracks in Belfast, at the head of the troubles, at a big chip on my shoulder. In fact, when I came to AA, a guy said to me, you know something, you're a well-balanced guy. I thought to myself, finally somebody knows what's going on around here, you know? He says, yeah, you got a chip on both shoulders, you know? I hated everything, hated everybody, could always find the needle in the haystack and sit right on top of it. So I'm blaming my life. This poor, can't get a break guy. I don't want to look at what's going on in my life on the inside. I want to point the finger. It's your fault. It's him. It's this. It's that. Alcoholics. I mean, it's no coincidence I'm standing in America when I was Saxon. I was a runner, a long-distance runner. Somewhere, someday, the right town, the right country, the right relationship. If I get things lined up out here, then they'll fall into place in here. You get the A in the first 30 days, 101, you realize it starts within. It's only when I work inside of me that these things out here start to fall into place in God's time, if they're to be. So I came home, and I'm such an alcoholic, I'm such a grandstander, like I'm home drunk one night, and I said to my father, I said, sit down, I got some bad news for you. He says, what is it? I said, I'm going to America, and don't try and talk me out of it. He says, talk you out of it, help you pack, when are you going? On you go, Columbus. Let me give you some fatherly advice, turn left at Greenland, you know? And like driftwood, I washed up in a place called Rockaway Beach, New York, you know? And I know there's some people here, you talk about like up in New York, you tell even people from New York, you go, Rockaway Beach, and they go, oh, Rockaway Beach. It's a big Irish-American neighborhood. They go, the Irish Riviera, you know? What it should have been called is cirrhosis by the sea, you know what I mean? They had more alcoholics. I mean, it's amazing, the alcoholic. We got that built-in GPS system. You could have blindfolded me and put me in a sack. I'm going to find a neighborhood that drinks as much, if not more, than the one I just left. So here I am, going to make it big in America. I end up in Rockaway Beach, and the Fortune 500 companies weren't hiring that day, you know. So I find myself as a bartender. And this crazy bar in Rockaway, and I know you've never drank in crazy bars, you know, you look like a very nice bunch of people, but this bar, you know, it was a type of bar you get thrown into rather than out of, you know? I mean, this bar had it all, alcoholics, drug addicts, degenerate gamblers, and that was just the staff, that wasn't even the customers, you know? I'll give you a mental picture and then I'll move on. Perhaps you can identify. If you want to see a full set of teeth in this bar, you needed 32 customers. You know what I'm saying? You know? Like the bar from Star Wars. I mean, and again, like a glamour girl with like three teeth would stumble into the place, you know? Hey, baby, where have you been, you know? But water finds its own level, and so do alcoholics, and I fitted in like a glove. And I hit another level, another strata of drinking that I thought I never would hit. Now I'm in America. No family, no friends, nobody saying, hey, it's 8 o'clock in the morning, what are you doing with a drink in your hand? And like Bill Wilson says in his story, I went down a ski jump. I probably did in 5 years in New York. My brother's is about 7 years earlier in sobriety than me. And I put down that to the fact he was still at home, getting the cushions, the mattresses. Here, put this in your back pocket. In those 5 years, I went down hard in New York. I'm bartending. And it was really quite pathetic at the end up. At the end of my drinking, I was in a job where I used to work from 6 at night to 4 in the morning. I could literally walk behind the bar at 4 to 6 and pour myself a drink and put it in the speed rack and drink to 4 in the morning. At the end of my drinking, I couldn't even get to work. And it wasn't because I was drunk. It was fears, phobias. I couldn't ride elevators. The subway would come in. I put my back against the wall. I thought I was going to jump in it. Like Bill says in the story, dragging the mattress down to the first floor. Boy, I can identify with those fears and hang-ups. And it got worse, and it got worse, and it got worse. And my life's falling apart, and I don't know what to do. And here's the sad part about alcoholism. That's why if you're new here, maybe as a family member, a drinking problem is solved by not drinking. And our book talks about it. A medical reason, a romantic reason, or a change of environment. And those people can stop or even moderate. But what about the real alcoholic? What about guys and gals like us? What separates us? I'll tell you what separated me. The worst years of my drinking, I hope they were the worst years. 27 to 30 were after I made a firm conviction not to drink anymore. The worst years. And like it says in chapter 3, taking oaths, proclamations. I've been up the Stepping Stones a few times, and they got a big family Bible as you walk in the door. And you open up in the fly cover, and you see the promises that Bill would write to Lois after another debacle of drinking. And they're dated 1927, 1929, 1931. And you can tell almost the words off the page that it's heartfelt, that he really meant it. But he had nothing between him and the first drink. And even though all this chaos, it wasn't enough to get him sober. I can identify with that. At 27 to 30, I'm hitting a stage of drinking now. Hospitalizations, convulsions, seizures, round-the-clock drunks, locked up for drink, strapped down for drink, restraining sheets. And I would drink again, and I drink again, and I drink again. And it's one more attempt at not drinking, followed by one more failure at drinking ad infinitum. And I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm living in one of the most populated cities in the world, New York City, and I feel so alone, so bereft of spirit, so detached from humanity, that I might as well be walking on the mountains of the moon. I would love to be able to run over to somebody and grab them by the wrist on First Avenue and say, you know what? They tell me not to drink, and I try not drinking. But the seconds feel like minutes, and the minutes feel like hours, and the hours feel like days. I feel like the Count of Monte Cristo marking this thing at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's just terrible. And I got me on me, and I can't get me off of me, and I feel like I'm shackled to self, and I don't know what's wrong with me. But I don't know that. I don't know how to put the words and music to that. I don't know how to articulate that or verbalize that. I don't know what alcoholism is and what it's not. So what do? I try to push this stuff down. And I try to push it down. But it just keeps coming back up. And the only thing that I know is a glass of Bushmills and a pint of Guinness. And it's one more go around to keep that stuff down. Incredible. What a terrible, terrible disease. And the thing about it is, and I'll give you one vignette that really brings it home to me that this is alcoholism and not just an alcohol problem. That ISM on the end of that word separates me from the normal or the heavy drinker. I'll give you one vignette. I went on a bad drunk one time. And when I drank at this stage, all I did was drink and breathe. I didn't eat. I didn't work. Maybe the first 2 days I could hack it in a bar, then I'd just go to the mattresses, as they say in The Godfather, locked up in the house, going out around the clock. I'm drinking about 10 or 12 days. I ran out of booze, and I go down to a bar in the middle of the night to get drink. And I walked in, and I took an alcoholic seizure on the barroom floor. Now I had seizures before. And I woke up in the local hospital. And they had me in a restraining sheet. And they gave me some Librium or whatever they give you to get you off the ceiling. And a woman who was close to me at that time, in this on-again, off-again relationship, and she's standing by the bedside. And they took the restraining cuffs off. And I took her hand. And I meant this. I got a contract that I was signed it with my own blood. I said, I don't know why I can't drink. But it's obvious I can't drink. And that's it. I'm done. It's over. Finished. There's a friend of mine says, you did mean it. And I don't mean it at an intellectual level, at a visceral level. But I didn't have unity. I didn't have service. I didn't have recovery. I didn't have 12 steps to go from powerlessness to access to power, or 12 traditions that maintain a healthy fellowship for me to get well and stay well in. It was me against alcohol. And I left that hospital, and you'd have told me I was going to drink again. I'd have said, you're out of your mind. But here's what happens to me when I try to stop drinking without those things I just mentioned, 12 steps, 12 traditions, and three parts of a triangle. Here's what happens to me when I go toe-to-toe with this disease. Perhaps you can identify. A week goes by. I get this stone in my shoe. I don't know where it came from, but it's there all the time. 2 weeks go by, I start to get this knot in my stomach. I don't know where it came from, but it's there all the time. 3 weeks go by, the top button of my shirt feels tight all the time. a month goes by, if I get that far, it feels like everybody out there is on my case, even if they're not. Now, I say to you, for your perusal, that's 30 days I haven't had a drink in my body. You put me under any chemical test in the world, there's not a trace of alcohol in my body. I say to you, that's not a drinking problem. That's a living sober problem. Because I walked into a bar, stone cold, physically sober. And that's what Bill Wilson says. Insanity for the alcoholic. I bartended for years. I thought insanity was somebody dancing on the pool table. That might be insanity. It might not. It might just be drunken behavior. And drunken behavior is always irrational. Insanity for this alcoholic was after those 30 days, I walked into a bar. And Bill Wilson says, insanity for an alcoholic is the rationalization of the first drink while physically sober. I walked into that bar 30 days sober, and I told myself, the epitaph of the alcoholic, the doggerel of the drunk, it'll be different this time. It was her. It was him. It was this. It was that. And I take that first drink. I got a body that won't let me drink. A mind that won't let me stop. One drink creates a thirst I can't quench. And I'm done and dusted. And I don't even know it after the first sip. And this didn't happen once or twice, my friends. This happened so pathetically often that I'm almost embarrassed to tell you. And things, the love, that's what I'm saying to you. It's huge people. If love alone for the family and friends that are here and perhaps have scratched their heads on many a morning wondering, why is my partner doing this? If love alone could have got me sober, I'd have been sober a long, long time before I came to AA. But the love behind me was never stronger than the draw of drink ahead of me. Remember that poignant scene in Days of Wine and Roses when Lee Remick's drunk and she goes to Jack Lemmon and he's sober like a year and their daughter's sleeping in the bedroom and he says, stay here for us. Look at this. She's this perfect child sleeping. And she's, oh, the world seems so dirty, so black and white. And she stumbles off into the dark to this neon flashing light. And he's standing there with his daughter wondering why. I understand that. So if you're a family or friend, we get that. Thank God for Al-Anon. What a dynamite program. So we can understand each other. I give you one thing. I remember, here's a guy that was going to make it big in America. I'm living up in the Bronx on a basement floor, sleeping on a mattress, rent free. There was a phone that took incoming calls. And this was me. And the point is, you know what? Something for this guy, there's something about Christmas Eve in the life of an alcoholic. It's Christmas Eve. And my mother tracked me down. I would go off the grid for months at a time. And my poor mother, who has got Alzheimer's today, thank God you see me sober for many years, she'd be going around the neighborhood asking people who had relatives in New York, have you seen my son? Do you know where he is? She tracked me down on Christmas Eve. I'm drinking. I had a huge abscess in my mouth. I got the money twice to go to the dentist. I drank it both times. I'm drinking. Talk about quicksand stretched all around me. I get that. No matter how far I turned, there was nowhere to go. And the phone rang and I answered it. And there's a 5-hour time difference between New York and Ireland. And she says, I went to midnight mass tonight. And I prayed for you. And I'm thinking, don't pray for me. I'm beyond the beyond. I ain't coming back. I'm dumb, but I'm not stupid. And I hung up the phone. I'd like to tell you that I walked outside and there was a light snow falling. I'd like to tell you some Frank Capra, It's a Wonderful Life moment, but I didn't. I drank again and again and again because you know why? I didn't know what the problem was. You don't know what the problem was? I didn't know what the problem was, step one. I sure didn't know what the solution was, step 12, and how to go through the process from the problem to the solution. It was just me against the drink one more time. I'm going to tell you something for somebody that's new. Up until this moment in time, today, I have never beaten an obsession to drink. And I've gotten in the ring many times. It's like getting in the ring with a heavyweight champion. That little girl could say, don't get in the ring. But don't get in the ring means don't take a drink. and I don't know how not to take the first drink. So I do what we do. I get back in the ring and I tell myself, it'll be different this time. I'll stay off the ropes. I'll bob. I'll weave. And the result is always the same. I'm lying flat on my back, looking up at the lights saying, how did this happen again? Thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. We talk about the gifts. Thank God I'm born in a time and a place that has AA. Before, we're just talking before the meeting. Before Alcoholics Anonymous, where were we? Jails, institutions, or a graveyard. And by the time you've been to the first few a few times, the third one starts to look like a good option. And the sad part about alcoholism is, by the time you're graveyard dead, you've been dead emotionally, mentally, spiritually for years. And everybody who mattered anything in your life is long, long gone. Because that's what we do to people. We just squeeze and we squeeze and they're like, go away and drink. Or go in, don't drink. But you must leave our lives. We can't live like this. Thank God, because of Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob Smith. And people say, well, if it hadn't been Bill and Bob, it would have been John. Well, it wasn't John and Jim. It was Bill and Bob. They're the two guys that did it. There was a window, you know, in the old, you guys up in the satellite beach up the road, in the old space race, in the Apollo program. They would talk about the rockets coming back into the Earth's atmosphere. And they would talk about a window of opportunity. In other words, the rocket had to hit the Earth's atmosphere at a correct angle or it would skim off into space. And they would call that a window of opportunity. On Mother's Day weekend of 1935, there was a window of opportunity. And Bill Wilson stepped through it and took Dr. Bob with him. And we can trace this moment in time back to that moment in time. Thank God for those two men. Thank God that they provided this program that's so inclusive, so egalitarian. I'm saying this from somebody that's not from this country. Thank you for this gift that has been around the world. And any of us that were fortunate enough to be at that Atlanta on the Friday night and see those flags from all around the world. What an incredible program that we have here. What a credible lifeboat. I see it myself. I just go off. I go back to home to Belfast. You talk about people who don't mix. How about people who never mix? There's one place that they mix. Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been in meetings in Belfast in some of the darkest days of the Troubles. And I see people sitting together. And the Catholics know who the Protestants are. And the Protestants know who the Catholics are. But as Bill Wilson says, we hang together or we die alone. And all that other stuff is left at the door where it should be left. And we talk about our common problem, alcoholism, our common solution, the 12 steps, and how to go from one to the other. There's a friend of mine recently was at a meeting in Tel Aviv. And he said at the end of the meeting, they were joining hands to say the Serenity Prayer. And just with pure, by pure happenstance, or maybe it wasn't, there was an Arab woman standing next to an Hasidic Jewish man. And by their respective religions, they cannot have physical contact with each other. And the guy said there was this awkward pregnant pause. Everybody else was joined. And she took up, she picked up the big book. And she held one side of the big book. And he held the other side. And the circle was formed. I mean, this is an incredible event that we are allowed to be participating in. This event called Alcoholics Anonymous. There's an old joke in AA, you show the most grateful person in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'll show you somebody that's not half grateful enough to be taken for where we've came from, the depths of despair, and be brought here sitting at this meeting, nicely dressed with our family and friends, and living the life that God wanted us to live and got us out of that bottle that we'd been living in for years. Thank God for alcohol. So I said, somebody from Ireland, and there was ever a country needed AA, believe me, it was Ireland. Thank you very much for this gift that goes around the world, you know. But could I have a little drink of water there? That's, that one's mine there. The one over there.
I got you a first one.
Okay. Thank you very much. You know, as I move into the second hour, I'm going to need plenty of water, you know. Guys, like, keep it on one CD or we're going to talk after the meeting, you know. So I bottomed out. I'm here as a recipient of an old 12-step call in Alcoholics Anonymous. They have a group up in New York called the South Bronx Group, an old group, and they had a mantra, we don't give up on anybody. And I had bottomed out. Here's how I got sober. I'm locked up in my apartment drinking, and someone put a note under my door, and it had a man's telephone number on it, and it said something I've been hearing since I was a kid. You're a nice guy, but you drink too much. And totally out of character, I picked up the phone and called a complete stranger. And he had been praying that I might call, and him and another man came to my apartment, an old 12-step call, and brought me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm here to tell you, if you're new, you cannot get where I am today from where I came from without AA. You just can't. It's an impossible journey. I don't mean cash and prizes, the stuff that I just spoke about. At the end of my drinking, I drank for unconscious time. I knew the damage I did. I just wanted to stop the world. I want to get off. I got brought to my first meeting of AA. I'm so glad the meeting, there wasn't a guy standing at the door with a clipboard saying, check the box for what you want. I'd have checked the box for not drinking. I would have been delighted. But once again, I was shortchanged myself because I got so much more than that. I got me back, I got you back, and I got him back, and I'd lost a whole lot. I'd like to tell you that I came into AA and grabbed the ball and scored a touchdown, but I came in here with old ideas. It says in our book, let go of your old ideas, absolutely. And I came in here with old ideas, barroom mentality, and I wouldn't let go of it. Irish, stoic, stuff everything, don't tell nobody nothing. Carrying these two hefty bags full of garbage around, defending them, justifying them, rationalizing them. It's been my experience. You can fool them at the coffee pot at 7:30 at night. I've done it. How's it going, Paul? Oh, it's going great. Smiling from the teeth out. You know when alcoholism untreated comes to visit me? 2 o'clock in the morning. Could've's, should've's, would've's, guilt, shame, remorse, shackle to self, me on me. I'm 2.5 years off drink in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I was doing, as I said there, I wasn't doing all, first part of the triangle, unity. I was going to meetings. Many meetings make it easy, few make it hard, none make it impossible. I got that. I was going to plenty of meetings. Service, I said, I'm making more coffee than Juan Valdez. Are you kidding me, service? But what about door number 3, recovery? No. Mother Teresa says, even God can't fill a cup that's already full. Add all this stuff. You've got to empty it out to let some of God's grace come in. And as I said there, I'm carrying this stuff around. And as about 2.5 years off drink, I had a sponsor, but a name only. Now here's how alcoholism came into my life. Untreated. I'm driving out of the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel. This is 2.5 years off drink. First of all, my credit cards are maxed out because I'm still trying to fill the hole in my soul with outside stuff. I take a trip to the Caribbean. I feel good for 3 or 4 days, but I also end up back at me on me, the man in the glass. A bad jacket, feel good for a half an hour, back to me on me. I'm driving out of the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel. A guy cut me off. I didn't care who it was. It could have been Tony Soprano. I didn't care. I chased after him. I'm talking about a 5-lane highway. I jammed this guy against the guardrail. I got out of the car. There was an Asian gentleman shaking behind the wheel. His wife's crying and his 3 kids are crying in the back of the car. I was so disgusted with myself. I apologized profusely. I got back in the car and I hit my head off the steering wheel. I said, I'm crazier off drink than I was on it. I drove to my sponsor's house in name only, and I sat down and I says, Jimmy, I got to talk to you. He said, what happened? And I told him what I just told you, and he sat back in the chair and he goes, how old were you when this happened? I says, are you listening? This happened 20 minutes ago. Maybe this is why I'm getting nowhere with you. You're not even listening. He said, I'll ask you again, how old were you? I got it. Harry T. about the psychiatrist that helped Bill Wilson coined that phrase, His Majesty the Baby. I want what I want and I want it right now and you won't drive in front of me. I don't know if I was going to drink, but I certainly was not anywhere close to having any serenity in my life. and against my better judgment. And basically everything that's helped me in AA has been against my better judgment. I put pen to paper. Now, I'm not saying the four... There's no one-trick ponies in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a 12-step program, an old... We could argue maybe the first step. There are 12 steps, as I said, down to humility. But I was carrying a lot of stuff around. I was carrying a lot of garbage around. A lot of stuff from back in the day. Childhood, even before I took drink. Carrying the stuff around the schoolyard. And I got to get free. I had to get free from the one guy I couldn't get free from, which is me, and live in the one place I never lived. I grew up in Northern Ireland, as I said, during the Troubles. We sang about freedom. We marched. We fought in the streets for freedom. We were burnt out of our house one night by the opposing paramilitaries. I thought, freedom. I wouldn't have known freedom if it jumped up beside me. I was shackled to self. I was building walls. The program builds bridges. Back to life. Bill Wilson says, AA is a bridge back to life. I was building walls in sobriety. Robert Frost, the poet, says a wall's a good thing. Maybe if you're a New England farmer, but not if you're an alcoholic. I was building them high, building them deep. And the thing about a wall is, I ain't getting out, but you're not getting in. And it became this closed circuit. Sobriety's not like that. That's why the newcomer, the people standing up for the newcomer. Why? Because sobriety's like a backwater pond. It needs fresh water. If it doesn't get fresh water, it becomes stagnant. And nothing grows in stagnant water. I die, you die, we all die. We need that back and forth. I need you and you need me. And that's okay by me today. And I was carrying this stuff around. And I said, finally, I bottomed out 2.5 years. And I says, I said, Paul, you got to put pen to paper and you got to get rid of this stuff. And that's what I did. And I'm such an alcoholic. I fought this fourth step and I fought it and I fought it and I fought it. And then I says, they want me to do a fourth step. I'm going to do the best fourth step that anybody's ever done in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. They're going to be standing around the coffee pot going, did you hear about his fourth step? Was it really that good? Oh, yes. I wanted my sponsor to stand up at the meeting and go, I just want the group to know that Paul, who I am honored to call my sponsee, recently presented me with the Hamlet of fourth steps, you know? I cried, I laughed, I cried, two thumbs way up, you know? And my sponsor kept these real simple. He's like, listen, Paul. It's like driving to Florida. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous gives us clear directions. We can't get lost. Go over the Delaware Memorial Bridge to the Carolinas. You can't get lost. The 12 and 12, let's think of it as a spiritual guidebook. It'll tell you what you might see along the way. Those two books together, we're fine. I'm thinking to myself, he's been sober since 1961. I got like modern defects of character, you know? I found out a little of the defects I have been around since the garden, but that's a story for another day. So I entered the world, this is just me, I entered the world of the four-step guide. I had every four-step guide that was ever printed. Four-step guides for men, four-step guides for Irish men who lived in Belfast, you know? I had one four-step guide at 100 questions, 99 of which had nothing to do with why I drank in the first place. And my partner, and you see, I'm such an alcoholic. I'm thinking to myself, forget about a piece of paper. I got like flip charts, magic markers. I got highlighters. I got two pots of coffee going. There's a friend of mine who says, you know what you're like? You're like a dog running on linoleum. A lot of activity, but no progress, you know? Like... And my sponsor, I got the phone off the hook, and my sponsor, I live in the first floor, and he's shouting up, hey, your phone's off the hook. How's that fourth step coming? I'm like, oh, it's coming. He goes, how am I going to know when it's finished? Would there be like a puff of white smoke like when they elect a new pope, you know? Oh, the fourth step has been completed, you know? And there was rejoicing throughout the land, you know? Then I'm sitting in my apartment. I'm another spiritual awakening. I live in Rockaway Beach over the ocean. I said, I should be down the boardwalk looking at that special place where the sea meets the sky and drawing inspiration from that. So I slimmed down the operation, took it down to the boardwalk, you know? So now I'm sitting there with my legal pad, my big blank legal pad, you know? And I'm still into aesthetics, you know, I'm trying to draw the columns really, really straight, you know? I'm stopping strangers. Excuse me, do these columns look perpendicular to you? They're like, oh, those are wonderful. Who's your sponsor? Frank Lloyd Wright, you know? My sponsor finally catches it. He goes, what do you think you're like? Charles Dickens was the best of times, was the worst of times, you know? I'm just joking here. There's no one-trick ponies. But I started to put that stuff down on paper and started to get free for the first time in my life. Like Emmett Fox says, it takes two to make a prison. The prisoners and the jailer. And I had all these people up here in this mental prison. I said, those guys have burnt us out of our house in the middle of the night during the Troubles. And I said, I don't even know who they were. They're wearing masks, but a gun to my father's head. I thought they were going to kill him. Paul, put it down on paper and forgive them to get free. The opposite of resentment, forgiveness. It's only when I opened that. And see, the thing about having this mental prison with all these people up here, just like regular prison, every day you got to do a roll call of why they're there, what they did to you, and replay that tape over and over. It was only with the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous I opened the cell door and let them go free that I got to go free too. I'm not saying the 12 steps are the panacea for every problem, but for me, that brought me to a point in recovery where I could just say what was my work was God's work, and if you need outside help, let the doctors be the doctors. It's none of my business. But I'll tell you when my life really caught on fire. I'll tell you when new meaning came into my life. Was it good to do the steps and get a full knowledge of my condition? Absolutely. To know where you came and where you came from. But when my life really caught on fire, when my life really took on new meaning, is when I turned around and I brought another man through the steps. That's when things started to come alive. It says in your book, to watch a fellowship group around you is something you shouldn't miss. And that's been my experience. And I thank you for that. I'm not saying that my life became all, you know, cash and prizes. No. Things go on. Life on life's terms. I went through a divorce at 20 years sober. Never mind resentment to here. I mean up to here. At 20 years sober, how is this happening? And thank God I had the wherewithal that I know. I've got a lot of defects, but one of them's not spiritual pride. Thank God for that, to put my hand up, because I know the squeaky wheel gets the oil. I had to let somebody know what spiritual time it is in my day. Somebody needs to know. And thank God with this program and these people, because my initial reaction as an alcoholic untreated is to try to figure out how to get out of this labyrinth myself. And these people say, no, someone else will show you the way who's been through similar experiences. Thank God for AA. So life goes on. But the good news of Alcoholics Anonymous, I said I became a father in Alcoholics Anonymous at 43. I just thought that was one of those things that wasn't meant to be. And now I've got an 11-year-old daughter. I was talking to Steve, who was kind enough to pick me up at the airport. I couldn't imagine life without her. I love her more than I love life itself. And the things that I remember here, the first time I took her to Disney here in Florida, and when she was 4 or 5 years of age, and she was dressed as Cinderella, and the real Cinderella came, and they both locked eyes on each other and on her face. I said, I was looking for that feeling in a whiskey bottle, that sense of euphoria. And it was temporary and transitory, and it wasn't real. When that's the real stuff, the real memories that you give me. Oscar Wilde said, we knew the price of everything and the value of nothing. You showed me things of real value here, things that count. You know what counts? This counts. Relationships, one another, together. That's the stuff you think about when you're checking out of here, believe me. And this life that I've been given. And I will tell that once. I remember, it's funny how life goes. I was about 15 years sober, living in Rockaway Beach. And we were moving into a house. We were still married at the time. We were moving into a house. And I just had to give the keys over. So there was nothing in the apartment, only a blow-up mattress that I slept on. I just give the keys over. Everything's gone. And then a phone. And I'm laying this blow-up mattress, 15 years sober. And I have a heart attack. Like 2 o'clock in the morning. Now, let me give you some advice. If you're going to have a heart attack, Do not have it on a blow-up mattress. Believe me. I'm rolling back and forth like a boated fish, you know what I mean? I can't get it. And the phone's right there, and I knew I'm having a heart attack. I'm by myself. And the phone's right there, but I'm such an alcoholic. I want to see what I look like, you know? And I crawl on my hands and knees down to the bathroom, and I pull myself up. I'm like, man, I look terrible, you know? And I slide back down again. Then I made the phone call, you know? And the local hospital in Rockaway is Peninsula, but they brought me there, and they go, oh, no, you got to bring him to Long Island Jewish. They got a 24-hour team on standby. The reason I'm telling you this is to emphasize the day-to-time program. So they rushed me off to Long Island Jewish. It's the middle of the night. They got a crash team there when I arrive. And they ask you all these questions like, on a scale of 1 to 10, what's the pain like? Is there anybody here with you, a family member? We see a cross. Now, this is Long Island Jewish Hospital. We see a cross around your neck. Are you Catholic? Why is it better from Jewish, you know? I'm such an alcoholic. I'm like, let me keep all my options open, you know? So I'm in the hospital and I end up, it was a problem since birth that I didn't know about, and they fixed it up. I flatlined on the table. I was dead for 3 or 4 minutes. Had the whole after-death experience. My daughter was 3 at the time. I said, I can't stay here. I got to go next day. Anyway, now why am I telling you all this? I came out of that hospital to put some hardware in for this congenital problem that I had since birth. I left that hospital and I would send anybody who would listen. There wasn't many, but anybody would listen. You're looking at the new me. Between the program and this after-death experience, I'm not going to get annoyed in traffic anymore. I'm not going to get annoyed in the supermarket anymore. And for about a week, I was like the Dalai Lama of Long Island, you know? Somebody had cut me off, I'd be like, peace be with you, my brother. I'm in no hurry. I'm living in eternity. I've been to the other side. It's not all that important what's going on here. But you miss a few meetings, you don't talk to your sponsor, and even something like that, alcoholism just run right over the top of it. And you're back to me on me again. So I want to thank you, you know, just think about that there, and in the years since that, you know, and that tells me that there's certain things I must do on a daily basis. There's a friend of mine went drinking after a long time in AA, and he said, you know what, Paul, I had a lot of years and not enough days. You got to have days in here. Years are good, but you got to have this day at a time. You know what I mean? I used to say in the old South Bronx, it's a cinch by the inch, it's hard by the yard, and we just do it one day at a time. And I want to thank you, and I'm going to end on one story about Northern Ireland that I think really sums up this program, and then I'll sit down. As I said, AA, and the power of one alcoholic helping another. In 1946, there was no AA in Ireland. And a guy went home on a retirement vacation. His name was Connor F. He was only 2 years sober, and he went to a meeting and went to Dublin and realized there was no meetings. He wrote a letter to General Service and they said, well, we'll send you a startup kit. He stayed for a couple of months, couldn't get a meeting started. Just a bit like Bill Wilson, Dr. Bob, 10 or 11 years earlier. Finally, ready to leave, never underestimate the non-alcoholic, a woman in the hotel called Eva Jennings. Just started talking at breakfast one morning. She says, you know what? I've got this friend who's a doctor who works with alcoholics. He got his name and he went to him. He told him, and the doctor was sobering people up, hadn't even heard of AA. And he says, you know what? I'll tell you what. We got a guy in one of the rooms down here. He's been dried out 25 or 30 times. There's times he's drunk on the way home from the hospital. If you have any impact on him, I'll give you the full support of this hospital. Connor F. went down to the man in the bed. His name was Richard Percival. This was a dead man walking, had been talked to, talked that, preached that, preached over, and he knew it, a dead man walking. Connor F. did what I've tried to do here this morning, shared his experience, strength, and hope. Harry drank, Harry got sober, and heard the man in the bed make it sober. Richard Percival realized, this guy's talking my language. I understand this guy. For the first time, somebody gets me, and I get them. Them two men left the hospital and started the first meeting in Ireland. And Richard Percival never took another drink the day he died in 1971. That's the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. So if you're out here this morning and you're feeling that life's passing you by, there's a miracle here, as I said, with your name on it. Nobody can take it for you, and nobody can take it from you. Stay here with us in the lifeboat. This is where you belong, in the unity. Those are choppy waters out there. Stay with us in the lifeboat, because I need you, and you need me. I'm going to end on a few words from a place of my birth that sums up how I feel about you and how I feel about Alcoholics Anonymous. Perhaps you can identify with this. This is the Irish blessing, and I want to give it to you. May the road rise to meet you. May the wind be always at your back. May the sun shine warm upon your face. The rains fall soft upon your fields. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hand. Thank you very much.